Today we are continuing in Acts chapter 14, and where we left off last week was Paul and Barnabas had come into Lystra. They had been basically run out of town of Iconium here by the Jews, precipitated ill will and feeling. Paul and Barnabas had built up goodwill by performing miracles, and several people became Christians, both Jews and Gentiles. So it was very positive. But then the Jews were falling behind, and as I believe it's in today's commentary that Kaufman says, as always was the case in Paul's life, the Jews were never far behind. They always were trailing him wherever he went to sabotage his efforts. But anyway, so they left Iconium and came down to Lystra, and Paul healed a man who had been disabled from birth, paralyzed from birth. And of course, the whole community knew that. And so this was a real eye-opener to all of these pagan Gentiles, and which, of course, the Jews in the town, they knew it too, and that it's not explained, but everyone in this town of Lystra knew of this paralyzed man. It's not mentioned. He may have been begging like some of the others. That's the only way they had to make a living to help their family. Otherwise, they were just a complete burden on their family. But regardless, everyone knew about this. So when Paul healed him and he was able to walk immediately, well, boy, that got everyone's attention. And then it was a very, positive response. And then it became too much. Because the paganism raised its ugly head with these pagan people. And so they started calling Barnabas Zeus, the Greek god Zeus, and then they called Paul the Greek god Hermes. And Zeus, of course, in the Greek mythology, is like the chief god, the head god over all the other false gods. And then, now Hermes was the god that was an orator, and we get the term hermeneutics today from this false Greek god of Hermes. And hermeneutics is the study of public speaking, and it's how to speak well, and it's called hermeneutics. With the speech class, the proper term is called the study of hermeneutics, comes from this Hermes. And they named Paul Hermes, or called him Hermes, because Paul was the chief speaker. And anyway, this abhorred Paul, of course, to be worshipped as a idolatrous god. And the only message he was telling them is that they needed to serve the one true and living God, the creator of all things, as he had told the people of, told them in this message here to try to get them to stop this idolatrous worship. But, and he even ripped his clothes to show his complete dismay and opposing of this wrongful actions of these people. But anyway, it was very difficult for Paul and Barnabas to tamp down the crowds of them wanting to worship them as gods. So we'll pick up here in verse 18, and Luke says, Paul had just told them about the Creator, the one true and living God, the Creator who made the heaven and earth and the sea and all the things that are in them. And he was trying to tell them, he's the one you need to serve, not us. We're just humans, just like you are. And anyway, so in verse 18 of Acts 14, Luke said, "And with these sayings, they could scarcely restrain the multitudes from sacrificing to them." So even with all of this speech that and talk that Paul did, and with the tearing of their clothes, even that, they could barely keep them from making a sacrifice to Paul and Barnabas. Okay, Kaufman said about this, "Even in view of the arguments presented by the apostles, some of the people of Lystra seemed to be determined to honor Paul and Barnabas as gods. It was with great difficulty that the disciples restrained these zealous idolaters." Although Luke did not mention Paul's success at Lystra, there were, nevertheless, some who were obedient to the gospel. Among the more conspicuous converts were the devoted Jewess, Lois, her daughter Eunice, and the young Timothy. Now, he does not mention them here. We're about to get a mentioning about the disciples. So we know that there are Christians here that they have already baptized and have those Jews and Gentiles who have already obeyed the gospel. And there is a group that when they're about to stone Paul and leave him for dead outside of the city. And then there's a group of Christians that gather around Paul, and then to their great thankfulness and surprise, he gets up because they think he's dead too. So we know that there are Christians there. This is the first missionary journey of Paul. On his second missionary journey, that's when we are introduced to Lois, her daughter Eunice, and the young Timothy. And Timothy's already teaching people at that time, and impresses Paul so much on his second missionary journey that he wants to take Timothy with him, and in fact does. So, but anyway, Kaufman mentions, and Kaufman was felt like that Lois, Eunice, and Timothy were in this multitude. In this group, probably small group from verse 20 that Gret gathered around him. But regardless, I think he even mentions in here, we don't know when Timothy was baptized, whether it was already at this point or if it is in between Paul's first and second missionary journey, somewhere in there. We don't know when that was. But regardless, the point that he's bringing out here, you have these people here in Lystra that are obviously very volatile. And this is the origin area of the werewolf myth, and where the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where you just turn on a dime from being a normal human to just being a beastly creature. You're just so vicious. And that's exactly what we see here going to be in verse 19, from verse 18 to 19. They are going to turn on a dime from worshiping Paul and Barnabas, or wanting to, as Greek gods, to now stoning Paul to death. That's how fickle and two-sided, but how their emotions turn on a dime from one extreme to the next immediately. And but even out of this, this was not all, this was in vain, that this was all wasted, because at the very least, Luke tells us that they had Lois, her daughter Eunice, and the young Timothy. And Timothy was a lifelong companion and worker in God's kingdom and very useful to Paul. In fact, Paul wrote two letters to Timothy, 1 and 2 Timothy, that he thought so much about him. Okay, so none of this was in vain. You know, it might be unfortunate circumstances, but these are just things that that happened. Okay, verse 19. Then Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there, and having persuaded the multitudes, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing Paul to be dead. And Kaufman said, this was to become a sad pattern that would haunt Paul until his dying day. From this time forward, these children of the devil were never more than a few days behind the apostle. The enemies of Christianity from Antioch and Iconium had joined forces and pursued Paul to Lystra. The enemies of the gospel traveled a distance of more than 100 miles in order to oppose the truth. It would be commendable if advocates of the truth would be as diligent. It is difficult to comprehend the wickedness of those Jews. It is not difficult, however, to understand their plan of action. They would have first enlisted the aid of the priest of Zeus, already infuriated by the defeat of his self-serving device of offering sacrifice to the apostles. So see, Paul and Barnabas had already rebuked him. The priest of Zeus was wanting to build sacrifices, offer sacrifices to Paul and Barnabas. And Paul and Barnabas both strongly rebuked that and were, as Luke wrote, they were only scarcely able to restrain them with every effort they had, and they could barely do it even at that. And so Kaufman said that obviously then would have infuriated this priest of Zeus because command or order or desire did not get followed through. And so it might have probably made him look bad. So the Jews could have gone to this priest of Zeus, and this snowballed quickly to Paul's getting stoned. Kaufman continues, then they would have related how the apostles had been compelled to leave from Antioch and Iconium. And this is the Jews would have told this priest of Zeus that, hey, these two have already been run out of Antioch and Iconium. And then alleging, as they did of Jesus, that the miracles the people had seen were accomplished by the power of Satan. And Kaufman supposed that very likely was one of the things that they could have used in their devices to turn the priest and the people against Paul and Barnabas, that these miracles that you have seen in this miraculous healing of this paralyzed man was not from the power of God, the God that they're trying to teach you about, but it's from Satan. And so even you pagans don't want to be worshipers of Satan. You want to be worshipers of Zeus and Hermes and all these different false Greek gods. But you don't want to, nobody wants to be an ally of Satan. And anyway, Kaufman supposed that very likely, since they had used that against Jesus in the past, that they probably used that again. And then, of course, that's the famous saying that Jesus told the Jews that a house divided against itself cannot stand. So that's a contradiction of terms. There is no way that Jesus could be casting out demons who are servants of Satan by the power of Satan. Then Satan's house would be divided and it wouldn't stand. And so that's an impossibility. So that was Jesus's proof and evidence that he was not getting any power from Satan at all, because he was doing damage to Satan. The fickleness of human nature made the rest easy. The same mob that would have sacrificed to them as gods one day was ready to murder them on the next. It was the same. And now Kaufman, was saying here, I guess this is how he worded it and thought maybe this was one day to the next. To me, this seems like this was one moment to the next, you know, maybe within the same hour that they turned from wanting to offer sacrifice to now wanting to stone Paul. And not one day to the next, but anyway, the just going by the way that Luke mentions this, he just starts verse 19 with the word then, which sounds like, and not the next day. So it sounds like this is more immediate than the next day. It was the same during the life of Jesus. At one time, the multitude received Jesus with the cry of Hosanna to the highest. And a few days later, the same crowd was clamoring for his blood, saying, let him be crucified. And that was all in one week. On the Sunday, Jesus made the triumphal entry. This is the week of his crucifixion. He goes in to Jerusalem. They hail him as a king, and they say, Hosanna to the highest, to the Messiah that they realize and know are the Messiah. And that is now what's known as Palm Sunday. So this was on the first day of the week. He enters Jerusalem, and then on Thursday, they crucified him. And that Thursday morning early, they were hollering, let him be crucified. And it was the same thing. It was the leaders of the Jews that stirred up the crowd against Jesus in this time, in a period of a few days with Jesus. Here seems like it's more of a few moments, minutes or hours that the leaders of these Jews that followed behind Paul were able to convince this very volatile crowd from going from one extreme, worshiping them as gods, to stoning them. But anyway, Kaufman continues, stoning was a favorite method of execution with the Jews and indicates their predominance in this attempted murder. There is no mention of any formal charge or any trial. There was no need for Luke to stress the fluctuation, cruelty, and violence of men living under systems of idolatry. The simple statements of these two verses reveal both the hatred of religious enemies and the crazy reactions of the Lystra mob who stoned Paul, who they had just proclaimed to be a god, and dragged him out of the city. The Jews who took part in this didn't give a second thought about desecrating the streets of a pagan city with such a murderous act. But in their commission of an identical thing in the martyrdom of Stephen, they refrained from killing him within the city. Satan had indeed blinded such men. So he's giving a contrast here. Number one, Kaufman is saying, obviously, that stoning was a favorite way to commit capital punishment against someone. And that was the Jews' favorite method. And not the Gentiles. So with them stoning Paul, this stoning was obviously led by these Jews that follow Paul here from Antioch and Iconium. But now the difference in when they had stoned Stephen and when they stoned Paul, they took Stephen out of the city. They were not going to desecrate what they considered Jerusalem to be the holy streets. They were not going to desecrate those streets of Jerusalem with a illegal murder, and which they even knew that they were just so enraged with Stephen that they were going to murder him. They were going to stone him, but they didn't want to do it within the walls of the city, so they took him outside of the walls of the city. Now, what Paul is contrasting here is the Jews didn't do that at all here. They stoned him right in the city streets, and then they drug him out of the city as a dead man afterward. And now, Kaufman made the statement that Satan had blinded such men that that they no longer held this code to only stone people outside of the city, that they wanted to stone them here, just went ahead and stoned him inside the city. My thought is, it's not anything that now they're no longer, they were just so infuriated, they no longer followed their code, but it was more of, they didn't even care about this city. They were here in a pagan city. If they'd been in Jerusalem stoning Paul, they would have drug him out of the city the same way. That's what my thought is. And it's just because they're in a pagan city of Lystra. Well, they didn't consider that of any holy consequence or anything. And so there, it doesn't matter if you stone or illegally murder someone in the city or outside of the city. It's all the same. And that's my personal thought of why they didn't drag Paul out of the city. They went ahead and stoned him in the city instead of out. Anyway, whichever, this is what they did. Whether they were so infuriated that they didn't wait to take Paul out, they stoned him there in the city, or if they didn't even care about this pagan city, so it doesn't matter if we desecrate this city with a ungodly murder, it doesn't matter. So we'll go ahead and just stone him here in the city anyway. It's not going to desecrate this wicked city. In keeping with the murderous spirit of this mob, one can imagine that after the bloody deed was done, one or more of the perpetrators grabbed the assumed lifeless bodies of Paul by an arm or a leg and dragged him through the dirt of the streets out of the gate of the city to leave his body to whatever fate might befall it. And very likely, what would happen here, Paul was unconscious, obviously. He very likely was maybe even in a coma, but he was not dead. And it was what would be understandable is two men grabbed Paul by the legs and then just drug him out of the city and then left him there to, as Kaufman said, whatever might befall his body. So wolves, coyotes, whatever kind of wild dogs they had around there, any kind of scavenger, or, you know, as it would have been, what would have actually happened if Paul had actually died here, it would have been this a group of young Christians would have taken his body and buried him is what they would have done. And that I'm confident that's exactly what they thought they were about to do, is take his body and take it to wherever they buried people and bury him, and that would have been it. But then he ends up getting up here in a little bit. But Kaufman finishes up here with, this was a time in Paul's life that he would never forget. In Paul's own account of his life, he mentioned that he was stoned only once, and this, of course, is this occasion. And through it all, he endured, and the Lord delivered him. So that is what his comment is in one of his letters that he would later write on, reflecting about all the situations that he went through in his life. Now, verse 20. However, when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and went into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. And Kaufman said, there were now Christians in this pagan town. These disciples were powerless to prevent the attack on Paul, but now they gathered around his body, perhaps for the purpose of at least giving him a decent burial. It is fair to assume that Lois and Eunice and the young man Timothy were in this band of grieving disciples who stood around the bruised body of Paul. Timothy obeyed the gospel in Lystra. Whether he was baptized before or after Paul was stoned is up to the speculation of the reader. Why was Paul stoned and not Barnabas? The Jews were more discerning than the pagans of Lystra. The pagans might indeed suppose that Barnabas was the king of the gods, and they did suppose, they were calling Barnabas the king of the gods, Zeus, and they supposed that Paul was only a spokesman. But the Jews knew better. They recognized in Paul that Paul was the greatest advocate of Christianity that was produced in the first century. So Kaufman's reason for mentioning this is that the pagans might have stoned Barnabas, definitely stoned Barnabas along with Paul, but even Barnabas first, calling him Zeus, the head god, and Paul as only a spokesman for that god. But Kaufman said the Jews knew better. they knew that Paul was the ringleader here, and they recognized Paul as the greatest advocate of Christianity in the first century. And so very likely the pagans would have also stoned Paul, stoned Barnabas in addition to Paul, but the Jews very likely, or Kaufman's thought is that they said, no, you can forget about Barnabas, only go after Paul, that's good enough. You cut off the head of the snake and that'll end this movement right here. And which it would not have, of course, but that would have been obviously what the Jews were hoping. And to finish up with verse 20 here, Kaufman said, Derbe was a good many miles farther toward the border of Galatia, and one is amazed at the physical stamina and endurance exhibited by a man who, having been stoned to death one day, was able to travel such a distance the next. Surely the Lord must have strengthened him. So here, I'll read verse 20 again, because there's Luke always is very brief in his descriptions, but well, when he describes in very few words, there's a lot of things that are that go on. But he said, however, when the disciples gathered around him, then Paul rose up and went into the city. So he went back into the city. And then it was the next day that he departed with Barnabas and they went to Derbe. So this was really something. Here he was unconscious, left for dead, maybe in a coma. And then Derbe was, 50 or 60 miles from Lystra. And this is all mountainous terrain in here too. And anyway, Kaufman felt like that the Lord surely must have strengthened him to be able to make this 50 or 60 mile journey over these mountains the next day after he's been stoned and left for dead.